Rooftop Solar is grappling with a problem. There's a conflict between social justice issues and tackling climate change full bore. In this episode, we dig into the latest effort to change the electricity rate structure to deal with this problem. And at the end, we take a little peek at the solution that our neighboring state of Nevada came up with.
Welcome to Linkspiration Bay Area, climate change. We look at it up, down, and sideways. We follow the links between climate change and so many other issues, and all of it with a local twist.
Hi, this is Jean Rosenmeyer, and I'm back with our friends Amit and Pat from Yes Solar, and that's for your energy solution, right?
That is correct.
Okay, so tell me, how's the solar industry doing? I've read in the newspaper that basically rooftop solar is down 80%. Is that your experience as well?
Pretty much, yeah. Those numbers are according to the solar industry lobby group that tracks all this information. It's called CALSA. California Solar and Storage Association. Between 75 and 80% less solar installations from this time last year. Something like 17,000 to 18,000 jobs lost in the solar industry. Quite a few smaller installers gone out of business or are in the process of bankruptcy as a result of the changes.
So until 2016, there was the initial net metering program called Net Metering, or now known as Net Metering One. And every utility, no matter big or small, was subject to them. And Net Metering One applied until 5% of peak electrical output was being generated by solar systems. And that would allow the transition to Net Metering Two. Under Net Metering 2, they only obligated the big three utilities, so PG&E, Edison, and San Diego Gas and Electric, to offer net metering. Any other organization, like, for example, the Sacramento area is covered by SMUD. The Modesto area is covered by MID. These utilities were given an option either to continue net metering or discontinue it. And unfortunately, all of the smaller utilities have pretty much ended net metering completely before Net Metering 2. Net Metering 2 was based on retail rates. So if you generated electricity and the rate of that electricity was 20 cents, you were earning credits at 20 cents. You were selling it at that rate.
So if I were generating during the day, I would get compensated based on the rate at that time of day, and then I would pay at the rate of whenever I was using it.
Exactly, when you were taking from the grid.
Okay. Net Metering 3 is what started in April, and that started the so-called replacement cost, which is basically now they're only paying wholesale rates, right?
Exactly. So we call it Net Metering 3, but the technical term that's used is called Net Billing Tariff, where any extra solar power that goes to the grid is no longer compensated at retail rates, but is now being compensated at wholesale rates. So this is typically the rates that a utility would pay to get that power, whether it is from solar or one of the power plants that they're getting power from.
Yeah, you know, I should have started out with a summary of all the essentially the attacks on rooftop solar, because if I'm remembering correctly, correct me if I'm wrong, first they changed the net metering for residential, then they made it less advantageous to do commercial, and now they're proposing this, the utility tax or flat fee per month.
Right.
It's like a trifecta of things that are guaranteed to make sure that we don't meet our solar targets, or we only meet the solar targets if the big utilities choose to do giant installations.
Right.
Which I don't think they're going to do that fast enough, and that's what I hear you saying as well.
No, this was a big argument from CALSA when we were going back and forth with this at the PUC. Large-scale projects like that, you know, they could take decades to get completed. I mean, just the permitting process alone and, you know, locating these projects, where are they going to go? There's always going to be pushback wherever you suggest you build a new solar or wind plant. So it's just not really realistic to say that that solution is, you know, what's going to take the place of all this loss in the residential and commercial solar installation business, because it's not. We're totally off track right now for our clean energy targets coming for 2035. And I think it's supposed to be 100% by 2045. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've openly admitted that there's no way we're making those marks without more residential and commercial solar projects being installed closer to a rate where they were prior to this change. What are we doing here? We're California.
I know.
You know, we advertise ourselves as the big progressive daddy on the block. As California goes, so go other states. We're all perfectly aware of the climate crisis. Mm-hmm. We told you exactly how this was going to go, and it's pretty much gone exactly that way.
Oh, that's sad.
And unfortunately, we've lost a lot of time here.
It seems to me that the progressive movement is kind of split in two camps on this issue, because on the one hand, the people for whom climate change is the top priority are saying, whoa, wait a minute, you're killing solar. And the people on the other side are saying, whoa, it was not fair before, and we need to do something to make it more fair for the people who are not getting. So, Amit, you were explaining that in a really cogent fashion just before I hit record. Could you talk about it again?
So one of the requirements in order to install a solar system is you have to own a home. There's no way you can get solar installed if you have an apartment or if you live in a townhouse or if you're renting a house. So the person who isn't as wealthy doesn't have the ability to get solar to reduce their electric bill. What also some people are pointing out and what they're concerned with is the self-feedback loop happening. One thing that PG&E is obligated to do is they are required by law to provide electricity to everybody, which means if somebody has a certain medical condition, they have programs to provide discounts. If somebody is in poverty, they also have discount programs. And these are things that the solar industry is not obligated to do. So when you pay PG&E, you're also subsidizing some of these social welfare programs as well. But as more people are getting solar and people who are wealthier are getting solar and opting out, it's creating this self-feedback loop where less people are paying into the system, which means they have to raise the prices for everybody else in order to maintain these programs, which means more people switch to solar, which makes it more expensive for everybody else. Of course, this is a big debate because there are two sides of people pointing, is this true, is it not? And it comes back to down to we need some level of transparency. We need to look at PG&E's actual data to see what exactly is going on in order to come up with something more equitable. Otherwise, this concern that solar has turned into something that the wealthy can use as a way of opting out of electric bills, but then putting more of that burden on people who don't have solar.
But it's a serious problem. Do you think the perception that the people who are doing rooftop solar are higher income, you think that's wrong?
I would say a lot of our customers are upper income. They are mostly at minimum upper middle class.
I see that CPUC and PG&E are thinking that what we could do as a solution would be to say, okay, everybody has to pay a minimum amount, and we're going to set that amount based on your income. I shudder to know how they're going to figure that out. And thereby, everybody will chip in for, as you say, not only the maintenance of the grid, but the people who get subsidized power.
And the issue with that solution is one thing we told every customer is that their net metering program was guaranteed for 20 years. And by switching to income base, whether income base is something that should be looked at is, I think, it's another debate. But what I'm going to answer here is if somebody has a net metering agreement and then all of a sudden they completely change how they're compensated. So in this case, what PG&E wants to do is have a high base rate, but then charge a small amount for electricity. It basically, a lot of customers would have made the decision not to have gone solar anyway. So PG&E and the state should have had some sort of program that people weren't basically screwed, that they signed a 20-year agreement with PG&E for going solar or whatever utility they have, only for the rules to change this much.
I hadn't even thought of that. Basically, people who got solar back in the day, they're still going to have to pay this flat fee.
Exactly. This proposed idea, it's going to apply for anybody who has a grandfathered system. So even if you had your system, like we used to tell our customers that even if you had your system installed last year, you're guaranteed 20 years. By law, PG&E cannot remove the net metering, which is true. They can't, but the state is trying to change the law. And that's something, unfortunately, nothing we can do about that because it's ultimately up to the legislature. But that is a concern. Like, are people who put tens of thousands of dollars into their solar system, are they going to be basically cheated out of their investment? And technically they're keeping it. It's kind of like you can violate the spirit of net metering, but by charging a large base price, but then making the cost of electricity small beyond that.
I would say smaller. I don't think their rates are going to be small.
What the program is it's going to be a large base price. So you pay your base price and then you pay per unit of electricity. So they're going to drop the price per kilowatt, but you're increasing the base charge, which is the cost of being connected to the grid.
Indeed.
Yeah, there's also different levels of this utility tax being proposed. PG&E is at, let's see, incomes of 25 to 50 grand a year. You're going to get an extra $26 imposed on your monthly bill if PG&E gets its way. If you're in the $50,000 to $75,000 a year category, well, the same amount there, but $75,000 to $100,000 income, yeah, then it's a $51 suggested utility tax from PG&E.
Yeah, we don't know if they're going to get the dollar. I mean, they've already brought the dollar amount down, right? Because originally they said it would be $30 to $70 a month, and now they've...
There's all different rates being suggested by all different groups. So, you know, those are obviously the utilities are going to have the highest suggested utility tax rates. But then there's, you know, the NRDC has come in, as well as TURN, Utility Reform Network, Sierra Club, significantly lower taxes. And there's a bill being introduced, AB 1999, stop the utility tax, in order to restore a reasonable cap on residential fixed charges.
And I had not heard that, but I'm not surprised because people are kind of up in arms if they've heard of it, and a lot of people haven't. Does anybody know how they're going to find out what your income is?
PG&E already has a discount for low-income people. But of course, today, they don't ask everybody to submit their income when you're a PG&E customer. If you want that lower rate, you have to submit proof of income. So probably what they're going to do, my guess, is expand on that. If you refuse to submit your proof of income or your tax information, they'll probably put you on the highest tier, the most expensive. And I think probably the way they'll market it is if you want a lower rate, then you can submit your income. So that way, for people who want privacy, they don't have to submit it.
Am I imagining it, or is this, as well as a disincentive to put on solar panels, it's a disincentive to save energy if you've got this big flat fee anyway? And the people who would benefit the most are the people who use the most electricity.
Right.
It is tough. Because in some ways, energy usage is going up because we have electric cars for shifting. So we're moving from oil to electricity to power cars. So electricity will naturally increase. And there are certain things when it comes to electricity. The two biggest usage of electricity in California seems to be running the air conditioner and doing things like running the dryer. Or even like a lot of people now have electric heating. So PG&E is also phasing out gas for heating as well. So electricity usage is going to go up where people are not going to be able to avoid it. Like, for example, if you live in the Central Valley where you have extreme heat during the summer, where you're battling temperatures that get well into the hundreds almost every day. But then you also, in the winter, it gets even colder than it does near the coast, where you're seeing temperatures drop into the 20s quite often. But then on top of that, the Central Valley is also one of the poorer parts of California. But to their credit, they also are one of the breadbaskets of the country. Like, two-thirds of America's fruits and vegetables are grown in the Central Valley. So it comes down to, like, what are the ethics behind all of this?
Well, I don't think we came to the solution. What's the solution? What should we do? If you were running the CPUC, what would you do?
AB 2619. requires the CPUC to revise their net metering tariff to better align with California's 100% clean energy goals.
Tell me the bill number again. We should all call our representatives.
AB 2619. One of the things being talked about with these new bills is that the initial data, the initial analysis and research that was presented to the PUC by the utilities didn't include the large-scale, long-term benefits of going solar, of having more, you know, residential and commercial solar projects going up. This new bill seeks to have that included in the analysis when it comes to resetting rates for solar exports and other items.
All right, I'm getting depressed here. Is there any good news?
I have some. One thing we can be proud of as Californians is, despite everything, California does quite well in electricity consumption. Texas uses more electricity than California, but California and Florida, we use about the same amount of electricity, despite us being bigger. So we have 39 million people, Florida has 21 million people, yet we both use about the same amount of electricity per year. So it did show a lot of the hard work that California and the California people have put in trying to be as efficient as possible. I do see hope that this goal of being efficient in what we do will continue.
Yeah, and there's some hope that there may be some overreach here. That's what you're saying, Pat.
Yeah.
And it's a hard topic.
It's complicated.
It is a difficult one, yes.
It is a very difficult topic for those of us interested in social justice and climate change. And seems like there's no perfect solution. So potentially there has to be a compromise. What should we do to make it fair?
It's hard to say. I mean, some increase in the utility tax, I guess, would be acceptable and help balance things out.
There is definitely a middle ground. Like, Nevada took kind of a middle ground approach to net metering. What Nevada did is a net metering partial phase out. Right now in Nevada, if you're producing more than you're sending to the grid, your net metering compensation is at 75%. So if the retail rate at the time...
Wait. If you're producing more than you're using, is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So like, let's say during the day, you're producing more power than you're using, and the electricity rate at that time is 20 cents. The Nevada utilities will compensate you at 15 cents rather than the full 20 cents.
Mm-hmm. But so not as low as wholesale. So it's somewhere.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, 75% is still, like, they still have a solar industry going there. It's not killing the program. At least it's continuing. And that takes into account, like, some things like the cost of delivering electricity. I think it's a fair compromise.
Well, thank you. That's really interesting. Do they have a fixed fee as well or not?
So otherwise, they don't. The Nevada program is actually quite similar to California's net metering too, except under net metering too, the compensation for solar production was 100% retail rates. Of course, there were some non-bypassable charges that were small. Nevada's program is very similar, except they capped it at 75%.
Thank you so much, you guys. And I really appreciate you taking the time to kind of bring us all up to date.
Have a wonderful day. Thank you so much.
Linkspiration Bay Area is an independent podcast. Find, subscribe, and rate us wherever you get your podcasts. Our website is linkspiration.com, where you can listen to our archives, and there's also show notes, photos, and links to our guests. If you have feedback or suggestions for future episodes, please email us at linkspiration@gmail.com, and that's spelled linksploration. Look for us on Patreon. We are not in this to make money, but we do welcome donations to help with the cost of keeping the podcast on the air. We're Jean and Christy signing off. Until next time, thanks for listening.